This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hello and welcome to Scran, the podcast passionate about the Scottish food and drink scene. I'm your host, Rosalind Erskine, and my guest this week is James Thompson, owner of two significant Edinburgh institutions when it comes to hospitality in the city, The Witchery and Preston Field House. I went along to Preston Field to meet him a few weeks back, and we spoke about his life growing up in Edinburgh, the inspiration he took from the theatre and the arts in building his businesses and following his passion.
I started washing dishes in a old-fashioned tea room in Edinburgh when I was 12 years old to make some pocket money. And I loved the theatre and the drama and all the action that was going on in this old tea room and just the sense of theatre.
How the city and industry has changed.
When I started, it was 10 o'clock licensing hours and you couldn't get a drink on a Sunday. We didn't have a conference centre, we didn't have all the theatres and wonderful galleries and museums that the city has now. And the tourism industry was really 3 months a year.
As well as finding out about his own preferences for eating and drinking in Scotland.
And I'm spoiled for choice in Scotland, really. And there's so many wonderful places that I'm really looking forward to getting back and getting some time to actually travel around Scotland again.
I'm joined today by James Thompson, the owner of Preston Field House and The Witchery in Edinburgh. Hi, James.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good, thank you.
So for anyone that doesn't know, could we just go right back to the start and how did you come to own both of these pretty iconic venues?
Well, I suppose at school, I always loved history, art and drama, and I used to gaze out the classroom window at Edinburgh Castle and the old town, and I've always been a hopeless romantic, and I was kind of imagining all the people that had passed through the buildings, the castle, the Royal Mile over the years. And I started washing dishes in a old-fashioned tea room in Edinburgh when I was 12 years old to make some pocket money. And I loved the theatre and the drama and all the action that was going on in this old tea room just the sense of theatre. So although I loved theatre and drama and art at school, I actually preferred doing the props. I hated being on stage, but I loved doing stage design. At school, I was described as a dreamer, so I think I probably, because I kind of knew what I wanted to do in life, going to hospitality and creating my own places, I suppose I was just dreaming about what I could create. And my career over the time, my father was horrified when I said I wanted to go into hospitality, because he'd sent me to a private school in Edinburgh, spent a lot of money on fees and my education, and wanted me to be a lawyer or a doctor or have a proper job, as he saw it. And he kind of saw hospitality as being a bit of a dead-end job. 40-odd years ago, it was quite a hard profession, and it didn't have the kudos that it has today with all the celebrity chefs and cooking programs and everything else. So it was a bit of a battle to kind of persuade him that I wanted to pursue my career in hospitality. So I was, when at 17, I was sent to Jersey. My father had a friend who knew somebody had a hotel in Jersey, and my school holidays I worked over there, and my father thought that would kind of sicken me and put me off hospitality, the long hours and hard work and things, but it was quite the opposite. And I came back and went to college and did a course, trained the basics, the chef and management and things. And I started my own outside catering business when I was 18 years old, doing my friends' 18th birthday parties from home. And from that, I kind of built a wee bit of money and I applied for a job to open a restaurant in the Royal Mile. Then I ended up buying them out and opening the Witchery when I was 20 years old. So it just kind of was organic, and lots of hard work kind of paid off, and I took out 3 personal loans to try and open the restaurant, and I was a chef with 3 staff, and it kind of grew from there.
So, I mean, that's quite a young age. Was that quite sort of a big achievement at the time, or was it?
Well, it was. I mean, for me, I didn't really, I just took the opportunity, I suppose. You know, I had the opportunity to buy the property. And in those days, it was 10 o'clock licensing hours, and there was no drink on a Sunday unless you stayed in the hotel. And it's very different days in Edinburgh. So we didn't really have the tourism season was kind of June, July and August. Perhaps we didn't have the Hogmanay parties, the Christmas parties that we have now. We didn't have a conference centre. We didn't have festival theatre. We didn't have all the wonderful things that the city has today. So opening our restaurant up beside the castle was quite a gamble, really, because apart from June, July and August, there weren't an awful lot of people went up to the castle. It's changed days now, but so I kind of took the gamble, and fortunately it paid off.
And did you, I mean, both the Witchery and Prestonfield have these amazing interiors. Is that your sort of love of the theatre, and is that what you sort of put in to make it like a unique selling
point? Yes. Well, I mean, I was working kind of around the clock at the Witchery, and when I opened the Witchery in the late 70s, I didn't have the money to kind of spend on interiors, but I had old aunts and people who had passed away, and I loved the kind of, I was always attracted to antiques and things that were old, not because of the value, just because of the fact that somebody had crafted them well and looked after them over the years, polished them and cared for them. And I kind of collected old bits and pieces from old aunts that died over the years, and then when I researched the history of the building at the Witchery and all the witchcraft and the witch trials and things, I kind of cobbled together old bits of furniture and things, and kind of in the late 70s it was all kind of suede walls and purple walls and smoked glass tables, and but I couldn't afford any of that anyway, so I just went down the route of researching the history and kind of creating the theatre, cobbling it together.
And that's what lends itself to the name, the Witchery?
Yes, the between 1470 and 1722 there were over 500 people burned as witches in Scotland, and it became almost a public sport where the Crown and the Church were pursuing people who had the devil's mark, which could be a large nose or a wart, or it could be ladies who were practicing herbal medicine, or people who were talking to themselves, mumbling or whatever, just eccentrics, I suppose, at the time. And they were taken away and tortured until they confessed they were a witch. And the estate of the person went to the Church and the Crown, so some fairly wealthy people were also burned as witches, and it became a public sport where a burning would create a crowd of about 10,000 people on the Castle Hill. So I kind of researched all of that, and it was a period of history that I hadn't actually heard about when I was at school. It was not something we were taught at school. I think it's probably a period in history that the Church were a bit embarrassed about, because it was not something they wanted to, because of their involvement in the whole trials and witch hunts.
And what about Prestonfield, which is where we are just now?
So when I was a student at college, I actually worked here as a banqueting student, doing events and things and weddings, and I also worked in the restaurant, polishing glasses and cutlery and things, and just helping out. I'd always loved the place. My father was in the savings bank, and I first came here. He used to entertain clients here from America and things when I was a kid. I remember at the age of 5 coming along to visit here and seeing the big white house and the cattle and the peacocks and being kind of quite taken by the place. But when I worked here, I always thought, what an amazing place it was. And you know, you're right in the centre of town, but you're surrounded by 650 acres of land and 3 lochs and nature reserve and everything, so you actually feel you're in the country. It's like being in the middle of Central Park in New York, but you're actually, because you've got everything around about you, but you're in the country. So it's quite a unique location, I think, and the building itself was built with a lot of provis in 1687, so again, it tied in with all my love of antiques and interiors and theatre and things. So it got my imagination going, thinking, gosh, one day I would love to buy this building.
Have you completely revamped it in terms of how it looks, or did it look like this at any point? Was it, you know, quite traditional, or...?
It was a private house from the time it was built right through until the 1950s, so 1680s right through to the 1950s, a private house in the same family. And they didn't have, in the Georgian period, in the 1800s, they didn't have the money to build a big Georgian pile, so they added on Georgian extensions, because during the Enlightenment they entertained sometimes over 1,500 people a year in the house. So they built on a morning room and a dining room, which would allow them to have dinners and dances and things, and just a ballroom type thing. And they put on the porte-cochere in the front to make it look grander. But because they kind of made a lot of money and lost a lot of money over the years of the death duties, lots of original features remain in the house. So it was built by the King's architect that built Holyrood Palace, Sir William Bruce. So a lot of the actual main part, this part we're in at the moment, is the leather room. So, and next door, the tapestry room, are more or less in the state they were when they were built in the 1680s.
And do you think it's that kind of sense of history that is what would draw people here? Because they're both relatively well-established venues within Edinburgh that's also got quite a lot of like new things coming up. So,
yes, I think that some people want to come and stay in an authentic house, in a kind of lovely old historic house that's more or less the way it's always been, but also then have all the kind of modern things they'd have at home within their bedrooms. So they kind of want to have, you know, the televisions, all the stations, the air conditioning, the comforts they would have at home. So I think in the bedrooms, things are all discreetly hidden away so that you, when you go in, you don't see a television, for example, or an air conditioning unit or anything that's really out of place in an old historic house. But it's all there if you want it.
When you first took on the witchery, you were saying you did quite cooking, is that right? You were the chef?
Yes. Well, I couldn't afford a chef, so I had done limited cooking in my outside catering. And I suppose also in the 70s, it was things like, you know, prawn cocktail. Avocado was a new thing in the 70s, with prawns and things, and T-bone steaks and salmon venison. So it wasn't actually terribly challenging. It was kind of lots of grills, lots of fish, lots of fresh products, but not the kind of necessarily the Michelin star style food that many restaurants have today. So I could kind of manage that myself, I think, get away with it for a couple of years.
And so your dad wasn't really keen for you to go into hospitality, but did you have any sort of influence in your family when it came to hospitality or food and drink at all?
Like, well, my grandfather was a grocer in the St. Cuthbert's, the co-op. So I used to visit him as a kid, and it was the days before you had supermarkets. So it was kind of counter service grocers. And I remember just going into his grocer's shop and the smells of, you know, he'd grind the coffee and he'd slice the bacon and the hams and things and the raw vegetables and just the earthiness and just all the different smells that were actually in there in the theatre of this old fashioned grocer's shop. And I think that kind of got me into the food side, that visiting him in the grocer's shop and the whole theatre of it, the smells and the kind of displays they had in those days in old-fashioned grocer's shops.
And it's been interesting couple of years, and we sort of seem to be coming out of the back of it, hopefully. Do you have any sort of thoughts of what you think the rest of this year might look like for hospitality?
Well, I think it's the start of a new year, and, you know, the pandemic, the numbers seem to be going down. People that are infected by the virus don't seem to be having such a bad time as they were previously. So I think it's something that we're now living with. And I think it's people are now seem to be travelling more, and there seem to be an optimism looking ahead that this is going to be a good year. So fingers crossed, I think people will want to travel. And I think they are desperate to have a holiday. So I think we will see more, particularly American visitors and perhaps more Europeans this year, because obviously the last couple of years have been fairly disastrous for tourism.
Yeah. But did you find people came here for like staycations and things, like a wee sort of weekend break?
We actually had a lot of Edinburgh people booked in because, you know, they couldn't go away to Dubai or America or Florida or wherever for their birthday's anniversary. They just wanted to get out of the house and actually come for a few days and just stay in a hotel and enjoy themselves and be pampered and get out the four walls that they had in at home and have a holiday and a break. So lots of people from Scotland and Edinburgh and the UK. So we've actually been very fortunate when we have opened that we've been well supported by our customers.
Well, the Witchery is billed as quite a romantic hotel, but it's very nice here as well for like a couple's break. Is that, would you agree that this is the both of them are quite good for a nice romantic breakaway?
Yes, I mean, I've always been a hopeless romantic myself and never very good in romance, but I think creating the actual atmosphere for other people, I love, you know, with, I think, because we're all candlelit as well. So the Witchery is almost entirely candlelit all year round. That in itself gives a romance, but all the artefacts, the buildings, the setting beside the castle, and here, just the ambience of the rooms and orchids and the various plants and things we have around the build.
Do you have any plans for the future in terms of, would you open up any other venues, or are you quite happy to just continue with the excellence of the Witchery in Prestonfield?
I think if the right thing came along, but it's because I kind of throw myself into these things and it's almost like giving birth. So, you know, I created the Witchery from nothing. Now, Prestonfield was here, but it needed a lot of tender love and care to actually recreate and reinvent and it. So it's, I would never say never if the right thing came along, but it'd have to be something that was kind of, I could really get my teeth into. And again, in terms of my stage design and all my, I've still got a lot to do here and at the Witchery, because there's probably another suite I'll be creating at the Witchery and planning at the moment. And because the buildings are old and, you know, there's always refurbishment going on. So we're changing fabrics, I'm changing rooms, I'm changing carpets, I'm doing lighting and everything else. So there's always things to do. But if another property came up that really caught my eye, then I might be tempted. I'd never say never.
Nice. And the suite of the Witchery, is that one that already exists? Because obviously the building's quite old. Are you changing things around, or can you kind of create new things from what you already have?
Well, I have the top floor above the Witchery, which was my office and was going to be my home. But and it has, over the years, I've knocked a window which looks up towards Edinburgh Castle, and I've got another window down the Royal Mile, and you can see right down to Berwick Law on a clear day, over to Fife and to the Pentland, so it gets 360-degree views of the city. And that's probably, it's going to become a new suite, so I'm kind of working on that at the moment. Because I have an apartment here, and I also have a little cottage down in East Lothian, so I tend not to, I don't use it very much in terms of staying there, so lots of other people want to stay there, so I'll probably move out and let others move in. So there's always things happening, and enough to keep me busy and out of mischief.
And so we've talked a little bit about staycations. Where's your favourite place in Scotland to stay and eat? So whether that's the same place or two separate places, where would you go and visit?
Well, I stay in East Lothian because I love the sea, because I'm a Cancerian. So I was very lucky during lockdown that I could actually walk along the beaches and over the golf courses that were closed. And I just love the sea and the coast. I love going over to Skye, and I love the Three Chimneys, and just getting away from, you know, getting back to nature and the mountains. But I quite like to be near the coast and the sea, or near water, being a Cancerian. So even a loch, and so I'm spoiled for choice in Scotland, really. And there's so many wonderful places that I'm really looking forward to getting back and getting some time to actually travel around Scotland again, but as I say, I have been very fortunate to live in God's own county of East Lothian.
How would you say the hospitality scene in Edinburgh has changed over the years of you having venues here?
Well, hospitality, I mean, when I started, it was 10 o'clock licensing hours and you couldn't get a drink on a Sunday. We didn't have a conference centre, we didn't have all the theatres and wonderful galleries and museums that the city has now, and the tourism industry was really 3 months a year. Hogmanay was going down to the Tron and hearing the bells and then going home, and everything shut for 6 days. Whereas now we've got Christmas, it's a festival city, obviously, Edinburgh now. We've got so many festivals, from sign festivals, comedy festivals, television festivals, food festivals. So there's always something outside the pandemic happening, and hopefully that will all happen again soon. I think outside London we have the widest range of restaurants of different cuisines, which is amazing, and at all levels, from street food right up to I think we've 4 or 5 Michelin star restaurants now in the city, so, which is amazing for the amount of the size of the population. The whole industry has changed in terms of better working conditions. People are really, as much more of a career structure, people opening their own places or working in, we've got all these international hotels now, groups that are open, and more coming. So the city, I think, is in quite a positive place for tourism in the future. And I think also it's now the range of shops we have. I know it's retail's been difficult, but we do have quite a good range of shops and museums and galleries and things happening in the city for everyone.
And what would you say are the challenges, and what advice would you give someone who's kind of starting out now in hospitality, like with a business owner in Edinburgh?
I think one of my I was fortunate at the time. I did push the boat out when I was 20, but I actually managed to buy my property at the Witchery. And that's been a good thing for me, because rents in the city and leases, it's so difficult now to get freehold properties. And because I had the freehold property, which has increased in value over the years, and it's allowed me to kind of borrow against that and to help to build my dreams and help me to buy Prestonfield. But I think it's really quite tricky now, because there are so many leasehold properties, and once you make a success of your business, people put the rent up and you end up maybe having to move. I think if you can try and find a freehold property, it's quite a good thing in the city. But and just perseverance and hard work, you know, it doesn't come, no business really. Nothing comes in a silver platter. You've really got to work at it and have a passion for what you're doing and throw yourself into it. So it just doesn't happen overnight.
Just before we finished up the interview, I asked James whether his father ever came around to his way of thinking.
I think so, yes. I mean, I had an old aunt who always asked me when I was going to get a proper job every Christmas. But I think he lived long enough to see me buy Prestonfield, and I think he was quietly proud, but it's a kind of very Scottish thing. You never kind of, you know, I don't know. I think he was quietly proud.
And the final part of the podcast is a quick fire round, 5 questions all to do with food, if that's okay. Tell me the first thing that comes into your head.
Oh God, I hate this. I always get in a muddle about these. Anyway, carry on.
See how we go. Right, whenever I'm hungry, I think of...
I love really good bread. The smell of bread, just so I'm hopeless, because I once worked in a baker's shop. I kind of just love this.
Did you eat all the bread there?
I probably did. I certainly ate all the cakes.
Comfort food for me is?
Liver and bacon.
My favourite childhood dessert is?
Knickerbocker Glory.
My food heaven is?
Seafood.
And my food hell is?
Tripe.
Thank you very much. You're not the first person to say tripe.
My father used to love tripe, and my mother used to cook it for him, and just the smell of it cooking and boiling away, I couldn't even taste it. And the texture and the look of it just turns my stomach.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks to James for being my guest, and thanks to you for listening. Please remember to rate, review and subscribe. Scran is a Laudable podcast that's co-produced and hosted by me, Rosalind Erskine, and co-produced, edited and mixed by Kelly Crichton.